Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Welcome to Karen Reed Land Part 2, where the facts are a little bit tangled up, the stakes are sky high, and everybody seems to have a connection to somebody else. The state says Karen drunkenly ran over her Boston cop boyfriend in a jealous rage. The defense says not so fast, he never made it inside, and her taillight's blast radius. And it's the people in that house who should be being looked at. Jury selection, it is underway. Reed's legal team has filed an emergency petition to the Supreme Court. We are diving headfirst into what this case is really about. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, host of the Break the Case podcast. Jen, here we go. We're about to dive in, and there's so many questions and not a lot of answers and a lot of this way and a lot of that way as we're about to enter the second trial here. What's on your mind? How do you think this thing is going to kick off?
Well, you know, Tony, the number one thing that happens during any trial, in my opinion, is jury selection. Mm-hmm. Forget the evidence sometimes. It really comes down to the 12 individuals that are going to decide the case. Mm-hmm. And I just have so much pause in terms of, can they find a jury that has not been tainted? That's really my biggest concern with this case.
Do you think they can? I mean, it's still happening there. Was it a mistake to keep it there where it has been for part one, with the amount of disdain and just overall revelry on each sides?
I think it was. I think this really is a no-brainer. Take the Idaho 4 case as an example. They moved that out of Moscow in a New York minute as mm-hmm. soon as the motion came in. And yet here, where you have a much more vehement showing, you know, nationwide with what is going on with the, you know, what's in the streets and megaphones and signs and bumper stickers. It's insane what's happening in the Karen Reed case. And to not move it to Boston, a huge metropolis, not to move the case, mm-hmm. but to just draw from that section of people, sure, for your jurors and bust them in. I know it's expensive. Mm-hmm. I know it's a pain, but that's how it needed to be done, in my opinion, to get justice. And it's been done on multiple occasions with other trials.
Why do you think they didn't do it here?
You know, the judge really didn't want to do that. And it would seem that neither side wanted to do that. I really don't know, other than I think it is a rarity for that to be done in Massachusetts. In other jurisdictions, it's not that much of a rarity. But I think it was a big mistake if truly they want to get 12 jurors who don't know anything about this case. I mean, we've seen the interviews, at least the reporting of what's happening.
Yeah.
And they're all raising their hand. Yes, we all know about this. Many of them, a huge group, many already have made their mind up.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're going to get kicked out. But I mean, how many stealth jurors could be on that jury that no one ever knows about? Because Tony, the questions have been out in public resource for so long for them to practice and for them to figure out what they were going to write. And also, Judge Cannone said the 100 jurors, you know, that would be considered possible jurors, those people have known about their selection for weeks. So this isn't anything
Is this just how they do this in Massachusetts with all of this? I mean, or is this unique to this case? There's so many things seem to be unique to this case.
Well, I think it is unique from the standpoint of how much time was given for them to know that they were considered. And then also, I think for these juror questions to be leaked out, you know, Massachusetts is just so open. I think they've taken openness almost too much of an extreme, although I am a big believer in that. I don't think when it comes to the jury, juror names, juror faces, any of that should be released. Yeah. It's just too important.
Let's talk about the independent report that came out that talks about how the investigation went. It doesn't find any sort of conspiracy, but it shows really, really bad police work. I mean, just things, you know, left and right that this is done not the greatest. When you have an investigation that is so botched the way that they botched it, how do you take something like that to trial? I mean, after that report came out, whether you think she did it or not, just when you have such a botched investigation, and at the end of the day, really, it is somewhat up in the air where one could argue that she hit him or she didn't hit him. Take the whole going in the house thing out of it. Just, I don't think we know for sure because there's not a camera that is there. One could argue one way, one could argue another a bit, and both seem like somewhat valid opinions. And then you have such a botched investigation. How do you argue that as the state and go, oh, okay, well, you should trust us for all this, but all this over here, really, you know, we kind of screwed up.
You have to stick to the facts, Tony. When it comes to the absolute fact of DNA of the taillight being from John O'Keefe, that was not botched. When it comes to the fact that she drove away and there is dash cam video early in the morning of her taillight being broken, that's not botched. When you look at the hair being on the vehicle, now, people might want to argue that, you know, how did it stay frozen on there? And I've explained this before, that hair has moisture, just like your tongue has moisture. Take your tongue and put it on a lamp post that's frozen in Massachusetts, and let me know how that works out.
Don't really do that, anyone. Don't follow Jen's advice and do that, because I don't want the call later.
But it's the same concept.
And
I know there was wind blowing and everything else, but again, there was snow packed it on. You could argue that if you want to, but nevertheless, that part wasn't botched. Screaming, I hit him, I hit him, overheard by multiple people. That's not botched.
Sure.
The pieces of the taillight being embedded in his shirt on the arm that was scratched, you know, above the arm that was scratched, that's not botched. So you can look at a lot of what is peripherally that wasn't done well. But you can't say this evidence doesn't exist.
What about the issue with the impact? If it was a big enough impact that you have embedded pieces of taillight into his clothing, which is what the evidence does show, and people can argue each way of, well, that was planted or this or that. But bodily, do we see physical injuries consistent with being struck by a vehicle that hard?
I do because I think the brunt of it went right on his arm. I think it was a blow that was, how does she describe it? I could have clipped him. Mm-hmm. A clipped blow, if you will, to that arm, and it threw him back, and his head smashed against that frozen ground and split his head open. I mean, yeah. I see it. I can picture it. And I think the reconstructionist, the accident reconstructionist, that PhD for the CW that's going to come in is going to explain this much more eloquently than I can do. I believe they will do it the correct way this time, to have illustrations and, you know, his background in support of it. And I think everybody's going to see what many of us already see.
What's your thoughts on taking this to the Supreme Court? Because now they're trying to argue it there. I mean, that's a stiff road to go up, if the Supreme Court even wants to hear it, which I highly doubt they will. But if they were, I mean, if they were to take this thing on and go, okay, the United States Supreme Court now says that jurors after the fact can come back and say, well, that's not quite what we said. Some of them can say that anyway. And then that constitutes double jeopardy. It really doesn't. That's not double jeopardy. That's not how this works. Now, one can argue this should have been, you know, vetted out in the court a little bit more when the jury came back with their verdict. That certainly would have been nice to have been done. But after the fact, that would be throwing like every case in the world up in the air, at least in the United States, if you can have jurors come back and say that after the fact and have a verdict changed or have it thrown into double jeopardy. Where do you think that's going to go?
I think it'll go nowhere.
Yeah.
For the same reason that it's gone nowhere all up through the court system so far, through the entire Massachusetts system, including their Supreme Court system, and they would be overturning their own, you know, their own verdicts, or I'm sorry, their own opinions from before. This is nothing new. This has been appealed in much more egregious facts than this one, than this particular case. And, you know, opinions where people had said, listen, this is our verdict, but just didn't write it on the form. In other words, they're in a court setting. Mm-hmm. So no, this has no legs in my opinion, but of course they're going to appeal, and they should.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.